You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Clancy Miller, writer, pastry chef, and author of Cooking Solo, The Fun of Cooking for Yourself. Our host, Carrie Diamond, is on the road for the Cherry Bomb Cookbook Tour, so she asked me to fill in while she's away. Before we get going, let's thank our sponsor. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is presented by Le Cordon Bleu. My alma mater. Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school, has locations around the globe, from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from 9-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more information. Up next, we have our new feature, the Cookbook Call-In, where we get an inside look at one of the recipes in the Cherry Bomb Cookbook. This week, Carrie talks to contributor Amy Chaplin about her vegan coconut cake.
We are on the line with Amy Chaplin, chef and author of the wonderful cookbook At Home in the Whole Foods Kitchen. Amy, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Thank you so much for giving us a recipe for the Cherry Bomb Cookbook. Can you tell us a little bit about the recipe?
Yeah, sure. I made a coconut cake with vanilla bean frosting and berry filling that's completely vegan.
So why did you pick that cake?
This cake is one of those cakes that's the most frequently requested by friends and family for birthdays or special events. And it's also one of the most popular ones on my blog. I sort of get a lot of letters saying that people have made it over and over again. Again, for special occasions, though, because as you know, it's quite a bit of work.
I was going to say, your friends are very lucky because it's a little bit of a project to put this cake together, but it's absolutely worth it. Tell me what goes into this cake batter.
Oh, the cake batter, so it's made with whole grain spelt flour, and it's got maple syrup and coconut oil. So basically, I think vegan cakes are actually the easiest to make, the batters, because you just sort of sift and stir the dry ingredients, mix with a whisk the wet, and pour them together. There's no complicated creaming of eggs and sugar butter and sugar, and then adding eggs one at a time. And, you know, you do it all by hand, which I like. And it's actually really easy to make. I think it's really simple. But, yeah, there's ground up coconut, dried coconut. You want to get the unsweetened kind. And you want one that hasn't been sitting around for years because they dry out and get flavorless. So if you can get it from a bulk bin that's, you know, regularly topped up, I find that it's really nice and moist and smells really good. So when you grind it, it becomes really moist as well to fold through the batter. And that really adds great texture. So then you bake that in 3 different little pans or 8-inch pans. And the frosting is what I think is new for a lot of people because it uses agar, which is a seaweed, a neutral flavored seaweed that sets things like a gelatin would, except that you have to really know how to use it because I feel like most people use too much of it and things can become really rubbery. In this case, you want it to be like that because then you blend it and it gives you that sort of buttercream thick frosting-like texture. But it takes a lot of blending. And you also have to make sure that you dissolve the agar properly and, you know, you don't want all your liquid to evaporate while it's happening, you know. So there's a few little tricks to it. But once people get to know how to use agar, I feel like the world's your oyster. I mean, you can just take it in so many directions and create such a good texture in a really healthy way because agar, you know, is a seaweed, so it's full of minerals and it's actually really good for you.
So we had a little bit of agar intimidation because, you know, you had to dissolve it. And it's so interesting looking. It looks like a cross between like disco glitter flakes and fish food.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of clear, white, like weird thing. And I think you do, even though people say it's neutral tasting, if you do use too much, you know, you can taste it and it's a little weird. But like really, really cook it well and then really, really refrigerate that well and then blend it really well. So it's sort of like, once you do it right, though, I feel like it's just really addictive tasting, the frosting. frosting.
It was really fun to make. So we dissolved it in the base, and then you, as Amy said, refrigerate it, and then you cut it into cubes. And they're so, the cubes are so beautiful. They're like the prettiest tofu you've ever seen. And then you put it in a food processor, and you really, really whip it up.
Yes.
What's that all about?
Look, at that point, I do get a lot of emails to my blog saying, you know, like it separates the coconut because of the fat in coconut milk, which you want the higher fat one to make this because otherwise it just doesn't have that thick texture. It actually breaks when you blend it and you have to go beyond that. So you really have to just like work your food processor and stop and scrape the sides and, you know, repeat that a few times. It seems like forever, but it really is like 5 minutes, I think, of straight blending that it needs to re-come together.
So how do you assemble the cake?
Well, you want to have all the components cold. I think that's the case with normal cakes. I haven't made that many in my life. But if it's warm, it kind of melts the frosting, so then it gets messy. But it really is key. If they're all cold, I think often with vegan cakes, actually, they taste better cold, and it sort of helps the structure of them. I feel like if I've served this cake as a wedding cake once, and it was a real challenge to keep all parts cold and then assemble and then serve. And so, you know, if it's room temperature, it just doesn't hold up as well. But yeah, so you assemble it, you know, a traditional way you would any cake, actually. So you can just sort of add the frosting, put the berry compote, and layer and layer and repeat. And you can cover the whole thing, or you can do like you guys did, which looks so pretty, just leaving the sides bare. I love that.
What is your secret to transporting a cake?
Probably to assemble it on the location.
Ooh, that's
really
good one.
The trick. Yeah, like have that frosting in quart containers, have the berry compote separate. The cake in boxes is fine, or however, you know, box is always the best, actually, I think. And then assemble it there, you know.
Okay,
really
the best tip ever, and I don't know why I didn't think of that before. Anybody didn't think of that before, because you struggle, you move these cakes and you inevitably like the frosting's all over the side of the box, etc.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay. So you recommend serving it cold?
Yeah, or cool.
Cool.
I think,
okay.
Yeah. Not often, you know, you buy a cake from a bakery and they say leave it out for 3 hours or something. And because that sort of like aerates, it seems to sort of lift cakes that are made in a more traditional way with butter and eggs and sugar and things. But with a vegan cake, I feel like the coconut oil then sort of helps solidify it a bit, and room is fine, room temperature, but yeah, the cold is just, it's sort of more delicious, I think, especially the frosting.
Why do you think your friends love this cake and request it so frequently?
Look, I don't know. I think people love the frosting, and I think berries and coconut, I mean, it's just a great flavor. Plus, no one can believe it's vegan, so that might be a plus.
Well, Amy, thank you so much. We really appreciate you giving us the recipe and calling in.
Well, thanks so much for including me. I'm totally honored.
That cake sounds amazing, and I'm super excited to try making it. I'm a fan of vegan cakes, actually, so I want to make it and eat it pronto. I also have a recipe in the Cherry Bomb cookbook, which is gorgeous, and I hope everybody has purchased one. My recipe is a drink. It's the Cherry Bomb Rosé Sangria, inspired by my love of sangria wine and Cherry Bomb and Jerry's. Anyway, moving right along. Today we have a full house with two very special guests in the studio. First up is New York City chef Sam Davis. Sam is a chef, caterer, and restaurant consultant. I'm so excited that you're able to be here, Sam. This is totally kind of by surprise, because I literally just met you.
We just met.
Like, for reals, literally on Halloween.
Yeah.
I went on a whim to Chef's Club. I thought it was the last day of J.J. Johnson's residency there.
Yeah.
For everyone in New York City, we're lucky he's extended his residency to the end of December, I believe.
Yeah, New Year's Eve is our last service, and
yeah,
it's going to go out with a bang.
Exciting. But anyway, so that was my first chance meeting you and interacting with your mm-hmm. food, and I'm so glad that JJ set us up,
yeah,
because first of all, mind blown. That was one of the best meals I've had. I was literally happy.
Mm-hmm.
I love to eat. I love to eat out. I love to cook. I think it's actually rare to go to a restaurant and feel full on happy, like excited while you're eating, about what you're eating and about the environment, like the music, everything.
Yeah, definitely. Amazing. Definitely. We wanted to tick all of the boxes, like good food, great ambiance, you know, great energy, a good playlist. You know, I always say on my old blog and in my Instagram, I'm always like, the first ingredient in my kitchen is a good playlist. Like,
right?
Need it.
It's
if I'm
going
to make something, I need to have my music playing. So, you know, we wanted to check all the boxes with his residency, and it really just came together and has been exceeding our expectations.
It's a you all have created something really beautiful, but I want to learn more about your path. I'm particularly interested because you blog, you are a chef. Your path is a little non-traditional.
It's super non-traditional. So I didn't go to culinary school. I'm mm-hmm. self-taught. But I spent the first 10 years of my career out of college as a cancer researcher.
Amazing.
So, you know, I have an undergraduate degree, graduate degree in science. And food was always that just little special place in my heart. It was what I did at the end of a long day. You know, I'd plan my day around, like, what am I going to have for dinner? What am I going to make? And dinner was never simple for me. You know, it was always like an appetizer, entree, dessert. I'd overfeed my friends, have brunches, dinner parties on the weekend. And it just really became like my happy place. Being first generation of immigrant parents, you know, my family's from Jamaica. My mom always hit me over the head with like, oh, I came to this country with one bag. You know, you're going to be a doctor. You're going to be a lawyer. So my path was sort of predetermined for me. But it wasn't really what I wanted to do. And I just had to make the decision, like, this is my life. And food is something I really, really love. And it makes me happy. And I don't think a lot of people think about happiness in their life and career until it's too late sometimes.
Sure.
So I was like, I just wanted to make the jump, and I did. But I couldn't afford to go to school again. So I staged, and I worked for free. I would work at the hospital from 9 to 5. I would work in restaurants from, you know, 5 until 2 a.m. And I did that for years. And it was just great people like JJ, like other chefs that I met who just gave me a chance, you know, and who just really took a chance on me and helped me work my way to where I am now.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It also reminds me a little bit of my transition mm-hmm. into food, because I worked in NGOs and then on the weekends had an apprenticeship mm-hmm. at a restaurant.
Yeah.
What was that transition like, or how long did it, that period of working as a cancer researcher and then also staging, how long did you give yourself for that period?
I started my catering company, Savor by Sam, in 2011, but I did not quit my job until 2014.
Okay.
So I literally was running a business, mm-hmm. going to work full time, like still having to travel for like conferences and, you know, things like that.
Amazing.
Having clients, like it was, my life was chaotic for years. And money, like I'm not going to act like money's not a big part of this whole equation. Like I need to pay rent.
Sure.
You know, staging doesn't pay bills. And, you know, when you're trying to build up yourself as a brand and get clientele, you know, you have to fill in those gaps somewhere. So it took me a couple of years to quit my job. But yeah, I mean, I literally worked around the clock. So in the morning, I was at the hospital. At night, during the week, I was at restaurants. On the weekends, I was at clients' houses or doing events. So it took me about 3 to 4 years to really like cut all ties with my, I call it my former life.
Sure.
And just really take the plunge. But I mean, it just built this work ethic in me. And, you know, I feel like I had a high speed course of paying my dues, they like to say, mm-hmm. In doing that. You know, I always say that when I tell my line cooks, I'm like, I can do everything you're doing. I can do it. I can be here longer than you. I'll be here before you, and I'll be here after you. Like, because people who make the transition, I feel, sometimes want it a little bit more.
Right.
You know, that's not a diss to anyone who did take the traditional route, but I want it, so I'm going to work really hard for it. And yeah, I feel now like I've sort of settled into, you know, the role, and I've just earned it, I feel like. So now, you know, sky's the limit.
That's amazing. What advice would you give to people who, I feel like there are a lot of people, whether they're cooks, mm-hmm. or, you know, future chefs or writers, mm-hmm. a lot of people in the culinary sphere, mm-hmm. who have this passion. But as you mentioned, I'm so glad you mentioned money, because frankly, I don't think money gets talked about enough.
No, it's real talk. Yeah.
And it's, we all have to live. We literally have to eat. Mm-hmm. We have to have roofs over our head. And in a city like New York, it ain't cheap.
Hello.
So what's your advice? Do you have advice for your former life? And do you have advice for people who, like you, like me, frankly,
yeah.
Who have this passion, this interest, and they're kind of balancing both two worlds, so to speak?
Right. No, absolutely. Like I said, it took me years. And it sort of is a question I get asked a lot. I think more people are interested in like my path and my story than my food sometimes, which I don't take offense to at all, because you know, it really is a drastic transition that I took. But I tell people, like, write it down and watch it happen. I look like a crazy person with all the notebooks that I have in my house, but, you know, it all just started as, like, a plan. Like, this is what I want to do. I'm a very list-oriented person, so I'll have, like, a daily list. I'll have goals that I want to meet, you know, in 6 months, a year, and I literally just started ticking off, like, this is what I want to do. There were people who I wanted to sort of model my future career, you know, around. So I want to contact these people. I want to meet them. And really just doing your research. Because I come from a scientific background, I'm very, like, strategic and measured in the things that I do. So, you know, I really researched what it was that, you know, the tools that I needed basically to make this transition happen and make the jump happen. Saving, you know,
like, right.
I really had to put a check on my, you know, my spending. I went from a 6-figure job to working hourly in restaurants.
Wow. That's major.
Yeah, you know, but it was a sacrifice I was willing to make, but really just planning, saving, and I think the biggest thing for me, because I'm not classically trained, was, you know, confidence, like having the confidence in myself to actually do it. There's so many things that were sort of against me, you know, coming into this industry, sort of being older than the people that I was working with, being a woman, mm-hmm. you know, we always sort of second guess ourselves with the things that we do, but really just making sure that I kept my confidence. I kept, you know, moving forward in the way I wanted to progress in the industry, and just not being afraid. Like, everyone always asked me, you know, weren't you scared? How'd you do it? And I always tell people that my life motto is YOLO. Like, it's so cheesy, but you really only live once. And I knew I only had really one shot to do this, so I wasn't going to let it go or to miss the chance. And I couldn't be happier. You know, the days are long, they're grueling, but I really love what I do. I'm actually working on a project next year, sort of condensing my story, and I guess you can say a how-to, mm-hmm. you know, for career changers or people looking to get into the industry.
That's brilliant.
Just really putting, like, my story to paper and you know, hopefully inspiring other people who want to be a part of this crazy but amazing industry to, you know, take the jump, take the leap, and join us.
That's exciting.
Thank you.
That's awesome. I too, my motto is life ain't no dress rehearsal. So like,
right.
Get it in.
Get all of it.
Tell me about your food.
My food, I mean, being a Jamaican girl, you know, I always try to put a little island flavor on everything. But I really just am all about simplicity. Because even when, you know, before I became a chef, you know, I didn't really have that much time. So I like flavorful, fast, and flavorful. You know, like I like heavily seasoned food. I like marinades. I like, you know, heavy roasting. I love grilling. Like anytime I can get around some open fire, I'm all for it. But I also really like just trying new things, experimenting in the kitchen, trying to blend different, you know, techniques and flavors. I think that's why Chef JJ and I sort of work well together. Mm-hmm. You know, we really like to take food from different origins and tell the story of them and combine, you know, different backgrounds and different, you know, countries and flavor profiles and bring them together and have them really speak in a dish.
What is the collaboration process like when you're two talented people with strong points of view? Like how does that work when you're coming together, and not just you and JJ, but your whole team, in terms of developing the menu, in terms of specifically at Chef's Club, how does it play out?
Well, Chef is very good. He definitely, you know, is strong-willed, very opinionated, but that's why he's so super successful and amazing at what he does. But, you know, he really does listen and like to take people's ideas and keep it a collaborative environment. So, you know, he'll very much so, if someone has an idea for a dish, I'm like, all right, try it out. You know, let's see how it tastes. Let's see how it looks. And it tastes better, looks better, let's do it. You know, there's no real ego sort of in that process. But, you know, we go back and forth. We're like you said, we're very two strong-willed people, very opinionated people. But I think there's respect, and, you know, the food always wins. Like, if it tastes good, that's what we're going with. You know, whatever the better tasting, better, you know, looking dish is, that's what we're going to go with. Hands down. But, you know, I just want to see him win. I want to be as helpful as I can in the process. So, you know, I sort of bend to his will, But, no, it's a good working relationship.
That's cool. We have
fun.
Tell me about Savor by Sam and I'm really curious, especially, it's not just a path question, but like how you've built up clients. Like, tell me about your brand, your company, and how you've gotten, like how you've become successful. Like, you have a business.
I ask myself that every day. Like, I pinch myself. I've been so lucky and so blessed. Cause I'm just so modest. I'm like, people really like, they really like me. They really like what I've made. Oh my gosh.
Sally Field complex.
I still can't believe it. So Savor by Sam started in 2011. I started as just catering. So I would do like friends' birthday parties, engagement parties, baby showers, things of that nature. And I always say that like my company grew with Instagram. Mm. Thank you so much, social media. Like, yeah. I really do, to this day, still get most of my clients from social media or word of mouth. But, you know, I think because I was able to transition and shift my life so easily, you know, I'm just not afraid of change. So I started as a catering company, but as I saw a need in other areas, I pivoted my company in those areas. So catering is awesome, but it's a summertime, you know, job. Like, people have a lot of events, life events in the summer. In the winter, it gets kind of slow. Mm-hmm. So then I started doing a lot of like private chefing gigs. Again, you know, God has been really good to me. I meet people, I try to talk and, you know, tell them what I'm doing. And they're like, oh, I can introduce you to someone. So I've had the amazing opportunity to cook for the Fenty family, Rihanna's family.
Holy smoke.
I'm currently right now cooking for Leslie Jones on Saturday Night Live.
L-O-V-E.
You know, she's amazing. Yeah, just really being connected with amazing people just by word of mouth. So I do private chefing also. And I've recently, in the past 2 years, gotten into restaurant consulting.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of found this like area of people like myself who really love food, wanted to be a part of the industry, but didn't really know how to do it. So they have the money, you know, they're like, oh, I want to open a restaurant. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea what they're doing.
Got it.
You know, and they can't necessarily afford the larger hospitality firms to come in and help them, you know, get their restaurant off the ground. So here comes Savor by Sam. You know, I've been able to work with about 4 or 5 restaurants, like in the past year. Just doing a lot of startup and like turnaround. Cool. So I've been able to work with, I say all that to say, I really like to pivot my company.
That's cool.
So, you know, I'm sort of across the board now. I need more people because it's a lot, but you know, it really fulfills me. It really does. I sort of take projects on as they come, but the brand is still growing. I'm still trying to, find my footing and really figure out where the next few years are going to lead me. But they always bring me back to the kitchen, you know, especially with this Chef's Club project. But, I mean, all of it just comes from just such a place of passion. So I enjoy every part of it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
This is really inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm really glad you can be here. This has been a pleasure having you on here. And I'm so glad you shared a lot of your path, but also about your food and some really inspirational kind of practical things.
If anything, you know, if I could be an inspiration to just that next person who has, you know, a passion for food, but is unsure, and maybe, you know, afraid to take the leap. If I could be that for someone, or at least that example, and just show that it's possible, you know, I'm happy. I can go to bed happy at the end of the day. 'Cause it's not just about food. It's about the person making the food. And, you know, I like to show that we're people and lives change and careers change. But, you know, your passions are something that are with you till the end of time.
Totally. Props to you for living
thank
your
you.
Passions.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate it.
Thank you for being here on Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
It's been my pleasure, too.
Thank you.
On that note, let's take a quick break.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world, or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Clancy Miller, filling in for our host, Carrie Diamond. I'm joined in the studio with our second guest, recipe developer, photographer, food stylist, and blogger, Tegan Girard. Tegan started cooking at the age of 15 and shortly began sharing her favorite recipes on her blog, Half Baked Harvest. Her new cookbook, Half Baked Harvest, Recipes from My Barn in the Mountains, came out earlier this fall, so we're thrilled that she's here to talk to us about it. Tegan, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here today.
I'm excited to meet you. I really love your cookbook. It is so incredibly beautiful.
Thank you. That was definitely my goal in creating it. I wanted to create a beautiful cookbook, but that was full of delicious recipes.
Yeah. So tell us how you started cooking at age 15.
Yeah. So I am one of seven kids.
Amazing.
And my parents are slightly crazy, but one of seven kids. And I, you know, we were eating dinner. My dad was getting home late from work and then he would go to the gym. And so we were eating dinner at like 9:30, sometimes 10. And I'm just like, I'm hungry. Like, I'm over this. I'm just going to make dinner. So it's funny, I've been saying this all week, but I like started watching Rachel Ray and like Googling recipes online. And I'm just like, all right, well, cool. I'm just going to make this. And I made it. And I kind of fell in love with the reaction I would get off of my siblings' faces when I made something that was so good. Especially my mom, she was the best. If it was like a pasta or anything like that, she would, you know, like roll your eyes back and, oh, this is so good. And I loved that. Like, obviously I love, you know, cooking great food and everything, but for me, I love cooking for people, and I love seeing how much enjoyment they can get from it. So that's kind of my favorite part and how I got started cooking.
That's amazing. And what, like, how was it in the beginning? Was it kind of like smooth sailing right off the bat, or did you have trials and errors?
I'm like the type of cook that's like throw it in and like let's just hope for the best, or like not super measuring everything. And I probably definitely had horrible dishes, but for the most part, I would cook with ingredients that I knew I really loved and try things that I thought that I would love or whatever it was. So I don't remember like one dish that I made that was like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. But trial and error for sure. Like, I like this. I don't really like that much, you know, and just kind of having fun with it. Like, it was fun for me to cook at night and like cook for my family. And it still is. So it's all a trial and error and like finding out what you like and having fun with flavors and really building things that you love to eat.
Do you remember what your first kind of like big winner was dinner-wise with you and your family?
I should not say this, but yeah, it was, I will never forget it. Like, I made this cheeseburger mac and cheese. It was
amazing.
No, it wasn't. But my oldest brother is like a meat freak, and he's, oh, this is so good. Like, I love this. And to this day, I seriously think it is his favorite like dish that I made. I haven't made it in years. He asked me to make it all the time. I'm like, no, I can't make that. It's so gross. But no, I think that, you know, my family, they love any of the pastas that I make. Like, I'm pretty good at pasta. I got that one down. And pizzas and like good comfort food and stuff like that. I love, as you can see from the cookbook, I love a good comfort meal. My dad's pasta dish, actually, I make that one all the time, and I kind of took it over and give it my own spins. So I think, you know, I'm maybe good at Italian a little bit.
Okay, cool. I have a question. I love sweet potatoes, and I see they make frequent appearances,
yes,
which I adore. How did, especially like the sweet potato fries, like how did you get super into playing with sweet potatoes? And I love your play on sweet potato noodles. I think that's brilliant.
That's
swoodles.
With this, that was my editor right there. I got to give her full credit for that one. She came up with the swoodles. I love sweet potatoes. My mom kind of, when we were kids, she would always, sweet potato fries are her favorite. Nice. And she would always, you know, make homemade sweet potato fries. And anytime we had, it's funny because that cover, you see the sweet potato fries on there. And it's, I love putting sweet potato fries in salads and like in dishes that you just like, why are there fries in here? But it's really good. And it's different. But yeah, I think I love sweet potatoes. They're sweet. They're like soft and delicious. Who doesn't love sweet potatoes? So I love to try to incorporate them in dishes that you might not expect them in. And I love putting them with a little bit of spice because they are sweet. So I like that balance of sweet and spicy.
Cool. Are you also in charge of breakfasts or like weekend breakfasts in your family? Because the breakfast recipes are insanely
Gosh, delicious. No, I don't live with my family anymore.
Okay, so okay.
I feed them quite a bit. We're very, very close. But no, I don't actually live with them. So, but no, I love brunch. I love breakfast food so much. And I love breakfast for dinner, especially.
Me too.
It's so good. Sometimes you just don't have the time in the morning to make like this elaborate breakfast meal, but you do at night.
Exactly.
So why not? You know, I love the brunch or the breakfast chapter. It's definitely a good
nice.
One.
Yeah. It's really, yeah. There's inspiration for dinner there. Also like, so slight little switch here. You have a massive following, on social media, Instagram, Pinterest, like the whole nine. And your blog is wildly successful as well. How have you navigated that? And what do you see as the advantages to, say, Instagram over Pinterest or Pinterest over Instagram? And how has it kind of helped your culinary growth?
Yeah, for sure. In the beginning, when I first started the blog back when I was like 19, Pinterest was a really, like, it really helped me grow. I think a lot of people were really pinning and saving recipes and using Pinterest in that way. And it's changed a little bit in the last year. They have a new algorithm and things that have made it a little bit harder to get your content seen. But it was a great tool for me to grow the blog. And growing the blog, Pinterest was amazing.
Cool.
I think Instagram is my number one source of growth and where I see the most interaction with my followers, where I can reach the most people. And that, I would say in my second year or so of writing Half Baked Harvest, that really started to pick up. And when Instagram really started to grow for me, I really started to see, you know, my followers interacting and just more growth to Half Baked Harvest and the brand. And it was exciting. So I think that Instagram is huge. I think most people would agree with me on that one. And it's a great tool to use to reach a lot of people and to get your point across and your story. So I think that Instagram is just an amazing tool to help you grow and let people see what you want them to see.
That's awesome. And I'm really curious, when you first started blogging, did you envision your blog already as a brand, or was it kind of a part of the creative process?
No, I did not envision the blog growing this way. And I think that most people probably say that, you know, but I was basically, my quick story, I was, you know, I was 18 going on 19. I was supposed to go to school in LA for fashion design. I was like all set and ready to go. And I kind of did like a 360. I was like, no, I don't know if I want to go to LA. Like, I don't know if this is what I want to do. The school was really, really expensive. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if I start, what if I don't like it? And what if I don't want to do it? And so I basically had a freak out is what happened. Like, you know, just I got scared myself out of it. But really, it was the best thing I ever did, because for the longest time since I was 16, my mom was like, don't you start a food blog? Like, you read food blogs, like start one. And I just never did. So finally, I was kind of at like a crossroads, like, okay, well, what do I do next? I graduated early from high school with an associate's degree. So I did have 2 years of college already complete. And my mom was like, you know, start a food blog, like just see what happens. Like, you got really nothing to lose. I really had nothing to lose. So I started the food blog, and I really just never looked back. I kept working, you know, really 24/7 on it, really growing it, really trying to get my content seen in as many places as I could, and really putting my all into it. And I gave that, you know, about a year. And I'd say after about a year, I saw like, okay, maybe this can be something for me. Maybe I can take this somewhere. So I kept going and I took it somewhere, and I'm so excited about everything that I'm doing, the cookbook and all that. So it was great. You know, I think that if you have a serious passion for something and you really work at it, you can really grow it and do what you love. So
that's amazing. Yeah. Kind of dovetailing on one of the themes that came up with Sam Davis earlier, how did you, while you were growing your blog and growing your brand, how did it become like financially supportive for you?
So I'd say around like the first year, a year and a half, probably at that marker point, I started to work with brands. Mm-hmm. And those, so via sponsored posts, I would, you know, they would pay me to promote a product. And I'm the type of person, I've always been extremely picky about the brands that I work with, making sure I work with brands that I really do use myself and that I feel comfortable promoting to my readers so that it was genuine. And I think that's something that also helped me grow is that I've never have done a surplus of sponsored posts or anything. And so I think that's something that's also really helped me grow, not only financially, is I would, you know, ask more for a deal and say, I'm going to do this, this, and that for you. And, you know, this is my reach. And I think that we can work great together because I really do love your brand. So I think that really did help me grow. It helped me build a trust with my readers. And I didn't ever like sell out basically. And then also I do, you know, receive an income through the advertisements that you see on the sidebars of mm-hmm. my site. And then, you know, in recent years, the cookbook and other bigger deals that have come about. But in those first beginner years, it was advertisements that you see on the sidebars and sponsor content.
What advice would you give to younger people or anyone who's starting to build a blog or their food brand? Mm-hmm. Like, how would you suggest, what resources or tools would you suggest they consider or learn about to kind of build their following and build their brand?
Yeah. I think that social media is taking over the world.
Yeah.
And you need to be you need to know what social media is. You need to know all the ins and outs of it. You really need to familiarize yourself with it, especially Instagram, Facebook, and get yourself out there on those platforms. You can't not be active on them if you would, you know, like to be grown and seen, especially if you're trying to reach a younger audience or, you know, people in their 20s and their 30s. Like, Instagram is very, it's everything. And same thing with Facebook and even Pinterest. Like, you know, it's just, they're all really great platforms and you need to learn about them and you need to know how they work and kind of develop your own personal strategy for how you want to attack it. And I think that you just always definitely want to be genuine with your followers. Don't, you know, do things that you don't really believe in just because someone's giving you money for it. Like, that doesn't ever work out. So really do things that you love and you have a passion for. And I think that will come across to your readers, and that's how you grow. You gain that trust, you gain, you know, their excitement over you. And I think that's how you grow.
Cool. Speaking of passion and inspiration, what are the things that constantly inspire you when you're creating content, when you're mm-hmm. developing recipes? Where do you look for inspiration?
Yeah, I'd say my number one inspiration source is definitely the seasons. I do love, fall is my favorite, and you can see that in the cookbook. But I do love cooking seasonally and using the produce that is in season. I think that I get a lot of inspiration from that. You know, right now it's cozier recipes. It's using autumn squashes and things like that. And in the spring, it's artichokes and like light green things, and summer, tons of berries and stuff like that. So I definitely get inspiration from the seasons. But I also, my family is a really big inspiration source for me. My brothers travel quite a bit and they go all over Thailand. They're in Milan right now. Paris, you know, Morocco, they've been everywhere. And so they're constantly sending me photos of dishes or Ooh. Menus or anything. So they'll send me, you know, like a Thai curry or a pasta or a pizza. One time my brother was in France and he ordered a pizza with French fries on it. Apparently that's a thing in yeah. France. I don't know. I've never been there. but he ordered a pizza with French fries on it. He's like, Tegan, this is the best thing ever. And you got to make it. And so I actually did make it. But yeah, so they always are constantly providing me with inspiration. And I love that because I feel like it's unique and it's not stuff that everybody else is doing. And then, you know, just I do love flipping through food magazines and things like that. So I always find inspiration there as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of inspiration, where do you envision yourself going next? Are you working on another cookbook? Like,
maybe. No. Yeah, I definitely would love to do another cookbook. And that's definitely in the works. So a second cookbook for sure. I'd love to do some television. It's a goal of mine. I'd love to, you know, whether it's television or streaming through Netflix or whatever it is, I'd love to, you know, reach a larger audience and really get my recipes out there and help people have fun in the kitchen. Because I have fun in the kitchen. It's a relaxing thing for me. And I think it can be something that really, it is something that brings people together. You know, it's a fun way to end a Friday night or whatever it is. So I'd love to do, you know, some TV and things like that. And I'm going to continue working on the blog and, social, and, you'll see me on Instagram all the time. So I've got some fun projects in the works. Yeah.
That's cool. In terms of cookbook writing, I also wrote a cookbook and I thoroughly enjoyed it, but there were also kind of like, crazy making hectic moments as well.
Pull your hair out, right?
What were some of the most kind of joyful moments for you in working on this cookbook?
Mm-hmm.
And what were kind of the more tedious,
yeah,
less joyful
I'd say
moments?
The most like exciting, joyful moment was seeing the, I forget what they call it, but like the first pass or the second pass.
Oh my gosh, that's the best.
Whatever the point is when they print everything and they give you, so they give you a stack of papers, but it's the book basically printed out, just not binded yet.
Right.
And it's beautiful. And you're just like, oh my gosh, maybe all that hard work and like all the literally tears that you put into that cookbook are worth it.
Yeah.
So that was so much fun for me. I loved that. I'd say the tedious parts were constantly retesting recipes and making sure they would work for everybody. I also shot the photos for my cookbook. So that was very stressful because it's like, oh, the whole cookbook is me. It's Half Baked Harvest, it's Tegan Gerard, it's all me. So I'm like, oh my gosh, so much to judge here or whatever. But it was some pressures. But I wouldn't have wanted anybody else to take the photos either.
Sure.
So I'm very glad I did it. But that was kind of hard, you know, like just going over them and be like, oh, could this look better or whatever. So I'd say retesting and retesting recipes, finalizing recipes was really hard for me. Like,
yeah,
am I sure this one's really good enough and whatnot? So but I had a great team behind me the whole cookbook way. So I'm very thankful for that. And luckily it wasn't hard enough or wasn't stressful enough that I didn't want to do another one. So,
cool.
Or that I don't want to do another one.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Did you have a food stylist working with you as you photographed or you had to?
I wish. No.
Holy smoke. That's intense.
I did it. It was a little bit like intense. That's, you know, me like overachiever trying to like do way too much. But you know what? Like in the end, I do that for the photos on the blog. I style them and I photograph them. I think I would have been disappointed if I would have had somebody else do it. I'm excited that book really is, you know, me. And so I think it was great. And I love the way it turned out. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
Thank
it's
you.
Totally, you're like, you're super multi-talented.
Oh,
Not
really, but thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I was doing my cookbook, I was amazed by the team in terms of amazing photographer, amazing food stylists, and just seeing everyone do their role.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's one talent to be able to develop recipes and to, you know, make beautiful meals, and then like to have the visual component added onto it. And you're like,
yeah,
wearing all the hats.
I know. Well, for me, like I mentioned, I always said as I was a kid growing up, like, oh, I'm going to be a stylist. I want to style the celebrities,
right,
you know.
Make it pretty.
I absolutely love making things look pretty.
Yeah.
And I think when I kind of did that 360 to food, I started making food look pretty. And I love that aspect of what I do every day. I do love styling. And making things look very appetizing and just pretty to the eye, because I am a full believer that you eat with your eyes first. And if something doesn't look amazingly delicious, you're not going to want to eat it. So
exactly. On mange avec les yeux. Tegan, this has been such a pleasure. And I'm so glad that I got to meet you.
Aw, thank you. I'm very excited.
Yeah, this is like super cool. So thank you. And I wish you enormous success.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
Yeah, cool. All right. So that's it for today's show. Thanks as always to our engineer, Dave Tadashor, and a big thank you to Le Cordon Bleu. Be sure to visit cordonbleu.edu for information about this legendary culinary school. We'd love if you would subscribe to Radio Cherry Bomb and leave a review for the show wherever you get your podcasts. I know the Cherry Bomb crew reads every single comment and suggestion, so let them know you'd like to hear what you'd like to hear on the show. And be sure to pick up a copy of Cherry Bomb, the cookbook, in the newest issue of Cherry Bomb magazine with Chef April Bloomfield on the cover. I'm super excited to read that profile. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'm Ilka, and I'm a London-based photographer, retoucher, and art director, and part of photography duo Ilka in France. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? It's Olivia Bennett, who is a food, drinks, and still life stylist making food look like pieces of art for photography and film in London.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.